And yes, folks, you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's 11 a.m. this Saturday, January 17. Let me see. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Yeah, January 17, 2015, 11 in the morning. And this is the beginning of our live broadcast day here. I am the man behind the voice, the recorded voice that you were just listening to for a few minutes. My name is Ren Tuwiel. I am the host of the Mideast Migraine Show here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. By the way, we broadcast essentially to the city of Santa Cruz at 101.3 on the FM dial. We also stream live online at freakradio.org. That's freakradio.org. If you happen to be listening to us on your old-fashioned radio box today, just keep in mind, if you go to freakradio.org, click on the listen button, or to take a shortcut. I presume we still have the shortcut of the red oval on top of the transmission tower, and then you'll see instructions for how to tune in online. And this is the Mideast Migraine Show, the Saturday edition. I am just under the wire here. I crept into the studio 10 minutes ago. And what you were hearing earlier was an interview that John Malcolm graciously granted to interview me on his program. John Malcolm's Great Leap Forward is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 9 in the evening. Wednesdays starting at 7 p.m. And last Wednesday, he interviewed me for some 50 minutes. But that's not what today's show is about. Once again, I am hoping to receive a Skype call from the co-editor of the book that I'm reading on Saturdays. The book is entitled Freedom Sailors, edited by Greta Berlin, one of the co-founders of the Free Gaza Movement back in 06. And the other, her co-editor there is Dr. William Dienst. I got to know both of them very well in late July and August of 2008, when we successfully sailed from the island of Cyprus in the far eastern Mediterranean into the port of Gaza City. Okay. What I was saying about Greta was that I'm hoping she'll call in, as I have been hoping for several weeks now. Apparently it was exclusively technical difficulties and a small matter of scheduling, perhaps, having her call in. She lives overseas, and I'm waiting. Let me see if I understand correctly. She could call in any time between now and 1 o'clock our time here on the Pacific Coast, on the west coast of California. No phone calls from anyone else, though, please. Until a mid-show break in about 1 hour, I expect to be able to open up the lines. I see there's a great many number of peoples who are listening to the show, so I'll get right to the book reading. Once again, this is entitled Freedom Sailors. The full formal title is Freedom Sailors, the Inside Story of the Free Gaza Movement's First Voyage to Challenge Israel's Illegal Blockade of Gaza and How We Succeeded in Spite of Ourselves. And I'll read the stock quick reviews of this book. This single paragraph, written by Alice Walker, who identifies herself as an earthling poet, writer, and activist. Quote, Freedom Sailors is a powerful record of the political and humanitarian activity of some of the best humans we are ever likely to meet or learn about. These women and men leave us with the most wonderful of questions. Is human courage and sacrifice the same as love? And is it this love for ourselves collectively as humans that has a chance of saving us and our planet? To read this book is to see what we can be like in the face of imminent danger. Alice Walker. Another short review, shorter paragraph taken presumably from a larger review, a riveting account of one of the great moments in the history of nonviolent resistance, breaking the criminal and sadistic siege of Gaza and letting the prisoners know that at least some in the outside world care about them and their grim fate. The Free Gaza Flotillas are truly an inspiration. That was written by Noam Chomsky, PhD professor at MIT. Now, a couple more, quick as I can make them, notes before beginning today's reading. My programs, including the readings of this and past books over the past 14-odd months, are available in my archives. And my archives are located at two other websites. One can go to radioforall.net. That's R-E-D-I-O, the numerical character 4. Radioforall.net. Radioforall.net. You can plug in Mideast Migraines when you go there and catch up to previous chapters that I've read on the air. And the other website is Santa Cruz Media Center, Indy Bay. Santa Cruz, of course, is two words, S-A-N-T-A. Cruz, C-R-U-Z. Indy Bay is spelled I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y. Santa Cruz, Indy Bay. You will find my recorded programs archived there as well. Now, the thing is, I have to, as I said, please, no calls now unless Greta needs to call in on our studio line. So that's why I'm keeping that line open. And, of course, Greta, you can call in if there's a problem with Skype. I'm hoping that you're listening right now, but please hold off on the other calls. Generally, I accept no calls during the Saturday readings until the break. Now, if you want to communicate with me otherwise, this program has its own email address, of course, MideastMadness@gmx.com. That's, the program is called Mideast Migraines now, but the website, the email address is MideastMadness@G as in George, M as in Michael, X as in Xavier.com. MideastMadness@gmx.com. Let's get to it, folk. Now on Chapter 8, well past the midpoint, but you can always go back and to my archives and pick up the previous readings. For that matter, you can pick up your own book. Simply go to, I pretty much have the address in my mind, but I feel more secure reading it, www.freedomsailors.com. The book is entitled Freedom Sailors. Go to freedomsailors.com to order your own copy or copies. Copyright 2012. And that was 4 years after the actual voyage. And again, yes, I was there. I did participate in the voyages. Now, on Chapter 8, entitled, We Are Coming, We Have Arrived. Contributions to this chapter by Gamal al-Attar, Rentawil, yes, this Rentawil, Bill Dienst, Mushir Alfara, Marius Thompson, Mona Alfara, M.D., Jamal al-El-Kudari, Renee Boyer, Aki Nawaz, and Vittorio Aragoni, the late Vittorio Aragoni. At some point in this book, we'll talk about what happened to Vittorio, native of Italy. Okay, this is it. Chapter 8. We are coming, we have arrived. This section authored by Gamal al-Attar in Gaza. The sun was shining on August 23rd, 2008, and everyone in Gaza was waking up in order to get ready for the D-Day. It is the day everyone in Gaza has been waiting for a long time. A day we will feel like there are some people in the world who care for our suffering. A day we will feel that we belong to the human race and that our brothers and sisters in humanity care for our daily struggles. Scouts from different scout groups had signed up to be in the welcoming committee on the fishing boats. So we headed directly to the main port of Gaza at 0800 hours, 8 a.m. And together with policemen who are there to secure the crowds, we boarded the boats and started the trip to the open sea. Hours of waiting in the boats made everyone seasick. And by noon, most of our hope flew away with the wind. It looked like the two boats were not coming. We were screwed. And a reminder, this section is authored by a native Palestinian, Gamal Al-Attar, in Gaza. All the dreams and feelings that there was someone who cared for us got smaller and smaller as time went on. Jamal El-Qudari, the coordinator for the campaign, spoke at a press conference that the boats had gotten lost and made some excuse. I and the other scouts in Gaza did not want to listen to excuses. The people of Gaza wanted them here now. The smiles that were on every single face by the morning, the joyful people in the port waiting at sunrise, and the hope of seeing someone who would care for us changed into a huge disappointment. By noon, nearly everyone had left the port and gone back home. On the way back home, I saw Gaza looking darker than ever, and a small tear escaped from my eye. It looks like there is no one who cares for us, a Boy Scout told me. I opened my mouth to tell him that this wasn't true, but I could not find a word to say. And to clarify again, be not confused. We are talking about the experiences of Mr. Al-Attar and the Boy Scouts and the various others from Gaza on their own small fishing boats who sailed out to meet us or who motored out to meet us. We're not talking about the people of the Free Gaza movement representing some 17 nations around the world. We're not talking about what was going on. He's not talking about what was going on our two boats, but on their smaller boats. Continuing now. Just like all the scouts, I went home, took a shower, and tried to rest after a long day under heavy sun. All of us were seasick and sick in our hearts as well. I lay on my bed to sleep and forget about humankind. I set my head on my pillow and thought, we are on our own and nobody cares. Then my mom came to my room with a smile on her face. Jamal, the boats are visible on TV. So I jumped from my bed and asked her when. She said, it is just breaking news. I can't remember how, when, or why I found myself on a bus going back to the port with the scouts. I can't remember how we managed to be together again going to the port of Gaza. We all jumped on board different fishing boats and sailed to the open sea again. There on the horizon I saw three elements. A beautiful sunset, the SS Liberty, and the SS Free Gaza. On the east side of the port, more and more people from Gaza were gathering. This time their disappointed faces were not there. We could hear the people laughing high and delighted as they strained to catch sight of the boats. In a couple of minutes, those of us on the fishing boats came closer to the Free Gaza. That would be the SS Free Gaza, one of the two boats. And I saw the peace flag hanging up and Maria Del Mar Fernandez waving a Palestinian flag and shouting. Suddenly, I saw many kids taking off their T-shirts and jumping into the sea, swimming to the Free Gaza. My small boat got me closer to the boats, and as my feet touched the deck, it gave me a shock. My mind was blown away as I forgot every single suffering I had in my life under Israel's blockade. I moved over to someone who was so calm and a bit away from all the media. Hey, welcome to Gaza, I said with a smile. I kept repeating these words and getting happier with every handshake. By the side of the cabin, I saw a muscled guy with tattoos on his arms and a nice cap. Is he the captain? I wondered. After shaking his hand, I kept speaking to him, and within moments we became friends. He was this nice Italian guy who had left Italy searching for justice and truth, whose name was Vittorio Utopia Aragoni. I shared the Palestinian flag with him, and we started waving to the media and the tens of thousands of people who came to see the boats in our small port. For a short period, the boats orbited outside the marina. Then it was time to evacuate the boats and to greet our guests on land in Gaza. We scouts stood in line and saluted the new Palestinians who had come from across the globe with one message: stay human. I will never forget all the big and small and big hands that came out from the crowds to shake hands with the activists. I can't forget how tanned the people were after that very long waiting day in the port, but also I can't forget the spirit in the crowd after those heroes landed on the shore. I remember I went home that day with a charged battery for life and hope. The two boats weren't necessarily bringing supplies to the people of Gaza, but they brought what is more important. They brought enough hope for over 1.5 million people who live under the blockade that someday we would be free. And again, I am reading from the edited compilation of notes, private letters, and various authorships. It's entitled Freedom Sailors, the story of the breaking of the siege of Gaza by boat, which was the first time in 41 years that any commercial boats, so to speak, had entered the port of Gaza, other than Gaza's very tiny fleet of local fishermen going in and out on a daily basis, trying to dredge up a living for themselves. Okay, now this next section, again, that was written by a citizen of Gaza, Gamal al-Attar. I might have said Jamal, but I think the pronunciation Gamal is at least as valid. Gamal al-Attar. This next section was written by me, and one of, I believe, two of my contributions that were included in this book. Okay, Ren, on board the Free Gaza. The high point came with word that the Israeli Ministry of Information, after repeated warnings that Israeli forces will never permit our landing in Palestine, announced that now they will leave us alone, ostensibly due to the nature of our action being, quote, humanitarian and, quote, peaceful. The real reason for this 180-degree decision had much more to do with anticipated world criticism of Israel if they tried to stop us. Earlier, a formal letter addressed to Free Gaza Movement from their information minister concluded that because our shipment of aid and our intent to carry back Arab passengers was being carried out directly between Free Gaza and Gaza's, quote, outlawed Hamas government, our actions must be deemed as support of terrorism. Their reversal of position on this was clearly a public relations-oriented contradiction of a very long-standing policy. 2 to 3 hours later, the coastline at last appeared after we spotted an imposing smokestack to the north, Ashkelon, Israel. Just as we began to make out the harbor's opening at Gaza City, a speedboat with four men raced toward us, frantically waving and all smiles. Another soon followed. Then the welcoming committee's watercraft grew bigger and bigger, each one bristling with the natives circling our vessels, weaving in and out. The emotional climax came with the sighting of the breakwater's endless masses of cheering Gazans, 40,000 strong. 40,000 people standing out there greeting us. Children dove from the boats into the polluted water far from shore, eagerly grabbing for the balloons that we had started blowing up an hour earlier and tossed into the bay. Then, as if to seal the 2-year promise by Free Gaza, by the Free Gaza Movement, FG here, to close the gap and make Palestine's sea route open once and for all. The boats sidled up to Free Gaza and Liberty and spilled their teary-eyed passengers onto our deck, who then embraced us as if we were liberating soldiers. It's 11:20 a.m. This is the Saturday edition of Mideast Migraines for January 17, 2015. And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. This next section authored by Dr. Bill on board of the Liberty. Bill, of course, is Bill Dienst, MD, co-editor with Greta Berlin of this book, our ship surgeon. Dr. Bill writes here, "Land ahoy," someone shouts. "We scan the shore with our binoculars. We are now inside 3 nautical miles, and then the Gaza City skyline gradually enlarges in front of us. In spite of all the hardships during the past few years, Gaza shines like an emerald at this moment from the bow as we head in. As we get closer, the reality becomes clearer. Gaza is overcrowded. To the north, we see the coal-fired power plant across the border in Ashkelon, Israel, then the crowded cinder block buildings, beach refugee camp, then more sturdy high-rise buildings and towering minarets in the Ramal district of Gaza City, and then wall-to-wall inhabitation all the way south as far as we can see beyond the town and refugee camp of Deir al-Balah. Now we can pick out the marina. And there are fishing boats packed with Gazans coming out to greet us. The breakwater is packed wall to wall with people cheering. Later estimates put the crowd at about 40,000. It is as if we were astronauts returning from the moon. After all, each and every one of the Apollo astronauts has been to the moon and back. With the exception, of course, of one of the 3 Apollo astronauts who had to stay in the command module. Just thought I'd clarify that. Can't help myself. But as he puts it here, each and every one of the Apollo astronauts has been to the moon and back, if not on the surface of the moon, at least orbiting the moon. And an additional 3.5 decades have passed since the last humans have arrived from international waters into Gaza port. Black and white picture here of one of the 2 boats, I think it's the Free Gaza, entering the port to sheer joy, jubilation, and pandemonium. Hundreds of boys are swimming out to our boats from the shore as local fishing boats encircle us. It looks chaotic and dangerous, especially for the fearless young boys in the water. I am hoping no one gets hit and injured by a vessel or its propeller. Several dignitaries come aboard our vessels via the fishing boats, and we are served tea and coffee while we attach a ladder to the sides of our boats to accept those who have swum out to us from shore. A Boy Scout band plays for us from an adjacent boat. Pretty soon, both boats are jam-packed with people all over the deck and on the roof above. There has to be a limit. We haven't even docked yet, and it is difficult to see how we will get through all the crowds in the water to do so. Finally, the police detail starts coming aboard our vessels to do crowd control and limit further boarding of our boats. Our vessels ease their way through the local fishing boats and people in the water and finally reach their moorings. We slowly disembark and are escorted through the dense crowds and onto buses that will take us a couple blocks up the beach to the El Dira Hotel, our new home while we are in Gaza. We are pressing the flesh like crazy and hugging all the children all the way to the bus. A woman gives me a sash made of green fabric with Arabic writing and places it over my head like I am some sort of war hero. I say, "Shukran," thank you, in Arabic. We all gain insight about what it must be like to be famous politicians, rock musicians, or members of a sports team. And that was the rendition given by Dr. Bill. Several of these authors do come in and out in the course of the chapters of this book. I remember The Absolute Pandemonium. I remember watching one Palestinian adolescent helping himself to one of the many flags that we had flying on the mastings of the Free Gaza, untying it and helping himself to a handy souvenir. And I had to force myself to say, hey, who am I to criticize any of these people? I mean, you know, it's how different is it at a tailgating party here in the U.S. or some other stadium event? And I spoke, I believe, last week about the difficulties that Hedy Epstein was having in getting on and off the boat, and possibly having to do with the reasons why Hedy ended up choosing not to sail with us. Very precarious catwalk situation there that we tried to improvise for her. I wasn't especially worried about being able to climb off the boat, but before I knew it, in the process of my trying to become a landlubber again, hands and arms on either side of me grabbed my arms and hoisted me unexpectedly from the boat to the marina. And that was how I first set foot in my father's native Palestine. Okay, now this next section, written by Mushir Alfera on board the Free Gaza. Mushir is a native Gazan Palestinian himself who lives in the United Kingdom. As Gaza started to appear on the horizon, I felt ecstatic. I just could not believe it. I never expected it. After all the threats, I thought we would end up in an Israeli prison. I could not stop my tears. At last, I will be able to visit my mother, Layla's grave. My mother, Layla's grave. Layla always said to people around her, even when she was in good health, if I die, please tell Mushir that the last words on my lips were his name. Yet I couldn't be at her bedside when she was dying at the hospital where I was born because of this inhuman and illegitimate siege. My tears continued. Greta was standing next to me. She hugged me and in a very emotional voice said, Mushir, these moments can never be taken away from us. As we neared the coast, Derek, one of our colleagues, came to me asking to contact the Gaza port authorities to seek permission to enter Gaza's territorial waters. No international ships had docked in Gaza port since 1967, so the port authorities did not know how to guide us. By then, I could see Gaza clearly. I erupted, no need, there is a beach camp there, no need. There is the beach camp. There is Omar al-Mukhtar Street. I can see al-Shahada Street. The port is there, right in front of us. Mushir Alfera speaking there. He continues to write, we continued towards the port until our dream came true. We had reached Gaza against all the odds. And a black and white photo with Mushir at the bow of the Free Gaza. Oh, there I am, too, standing next to Greta. Whoopee. And Mushir triumphantly waving or raising his hand in an okay sign, whatever. Greta in sunglasses. Ren, Kathleen, Courtney, Mushir waving on the right, and Fadi with camera. Overjoyed Palestinians holding balloons and cheering behind us. Mushir continues with his contribution here. Without a doubt, our arrival was a breath of freedom and hope for the people of the Gaza Strip. The thousands waiting for us, everyone in the Gaza Strip, felt a sense of pride during those euphoric moments. It was a feeling of dignity that comes from defiance when much of the world, including Arab regimes, turns a blind eye to the Palestinian suffering. Even if we had only achieved a few moments of triumph for the people, this would have been a good enough cause. On the morning that the break the siege boats were due to depart from Gaza port, I woke up very early. I went to Khan Yunis Cemetery with my colleague, Fadi Jouadi, to visit my mother's grave. It was the first time I had visited the grave. I spontaneously found myself talking to my mother. I could not stop my tears, saying, "Mother, I am here. I am visiting you despite their siege." I used to joke with my mother. Quotation here, "Do not die when I cannot be with you." She would laugh and say, "Don't worry. I will not if you promise to place me in my grave with your own hands." I had promised to do that, but was unable to. It was a great feeling, a feeling of freedom that I had never experienced. It was the first time in my life that I had visited home without the humiliation of being questioned or interrogated by the Israelis, without being threatened, having my travel documents thrown in my face, and not knowing whether I would be able to get out or not. It is a sense of liberation I hope every Palestinian will experience one day. I am proud of being one of the first Palestinians from the occupied territories to enter Palestine without Israeli permission since 1967. Here I am frantically looking for some appropriate music. Not that I'm going to play it right now, but the important thing is I just found some. This next section, written by Mary Hughes Thompson, on board the Free Gaza. "Finally, slowly, our little boats kept on chugging toward Gaza. At one point, we were told we expected to be boarded within 20 minutes, so we each packed our smallest backpack with our most important possessions. We destroyed anything we had that might be dangerous for us or for our friends in Palestine if it fell into Israeli hands. The 20 minutes came and went, and another hour, and another. Greta whispered to me, 'I think they might not stop us.' And I breathed, 'Inshallah, if this is God's will.' Somebody shouted, 'Gaza!' And we all rushed to the railing and saw the misty shore of Gaza off on the horizon. We were euphoric. We were almost there. And we hadn't seen an Israeli gunboat. Another hour and the shores of Gaza became clearer. We could see buildings. Suddenly I heard shouting and I saw a small boat approaching, a couple of young men waving Palestinian flags, smiling and screaming. We started to inflate the red, white, green, and black balloons we had brought along, each showing a dove and the words, 'Free Palestine.' We threw them in the water and saw there were three boats and six and a dozen, and one that even had a brass band playing to welcome us. Boys were in the water all around us, diving for balloons, and then clambering onto our decks. I feared they might drown or that our little boat might sink." And let me clarify again here. We were still, maybe a mile or so, or a nautical mile from port, or 2 miles maybe, when the first boats reached us. It was a welcoming party extended from their enthusiasm to see us and their desire to greet us and disembark us. The young children, boys, I guess, or mostly boys, were not swimming out in the open Mediterranean Sea. I don't remember anyone swimming, child or adult, who dove in outside of the marina area, so we were well within the spit or the breakwater when these kids were swimming. And the water, by the way, is very polluted or intermittently polluted, and the reason for this is because the Gazans cannot maintain their they're circulating water sewage systems. They cannot maintain the sewage systems for the little clean water, where little aquifer water is still there after Israel stole it over many years. And the Gazans cannot maintain those facilities, that infrastructure, because for want of necessary repair and replacement parts, which Israel denies them, among many other things that Israel denies from entering into the Gaza Strip. So the water is potentially very toxic to anyone it touches. Continuing with Mary's part here. We couldn't believe it was real. Larger boats came to greet us. Then we were in Gaza port. Thousands of people stood along the wharf to greet us. Men, women, children. All waving, all shouting, smiling. Palestinian flags everywhere. A band played a welcome. Our friend Dr. Mona Alfera came on board to be greeted by her brother Mushir, who had sailed on the Free Gaza. Let me add here, in an earlier reading, I read about how Dr. Mona Alfera was a Palestinian who lived in Cyprus, Greek Cyprus, where our voyage of the two boats began. She lived in Cypriot, Greek Cypriot state there. She held a couple of, graciously held a couple of parties for the Free Gaza activists while we were there. And even though she did not sail over with us, she did, was standing on a very small motorboat, sailboat, among several other boats and the Cypriot Coast Guard when we left Larnaca, Cyprus, just to wave us off. And they went, you know, a few miles just alongside, and she waved us off. And now we come into Gaza, and she had somehow managed to get into there, having family and being from Gaza. Most Gazans do not have that ability to freely come and go. Generally, none of them can come and go freely into or out of the Gaza Strip, but she is a doctor and I guess managed to pull some strings. We left her on Cyprus and she was there to greet us. So let me continue again with the reading. Our friend Dr. Mona Alfera came on board to be greeted by her brother Mushir, who had sailed on the Free Gaza. It seemed as though all of Gaza was there. We hugged each other and were hugged by strangers. We were led through the crowds and onto land. As Vittorio knelt and embraced the ground of Gaza, we shared his joy. We were in Gaza at last. That was the moment when we all became Palestinian. And now I see the footnote that I somehow missed when I read the word Inshallah. The actual translation of is, if God wills it, a common exclamation in Arabic. Continuing with Mary's contribution here. Next morning, I awoke in my hotel room and tried to register what had happened. I was so afraid I was dreaming, as I had often dreamed of waking up one day in Gaza. I touched the walls. I looked at Greta sleeping. I peered through the window and saw the beach, fishermen setting off in the early light, and then I spied our two little boats bobbing up and down, and I dared to believe it was true. I sent an email to my friends who were waiting for news. Here is the text of Mary's email. I woke up this morning wondering if it was all a dream, and then I looked through the window and saw the harbor and the fishing boats, and our two proud little boats, Free Gaza and Liberty, bobbing gently in the Gaza breeze, and I could finally believe we are here. There are not enough words to describe the feelings we all had as we saw the shores of Gaza appear on our horizon, And then, as we got closer and closer, we were welcomed by the first of dozens of fishing boats, all crowded with cheering, waving gossans who had waited since early morning for our arrival. Dozens of them jumped into the water and climbed aboard our boats, cheering and waving and hugging everybody, smiling and telling us, "You are welcome." I don't know how so many members of our welcoming committee managed to crowd onto the wharf. Women, men, children, a band playing for us, and police trying to control them as more of them jumped into the water to reach us. It was truly an experience for a lifetime. Surreal. After 2 years of planning and hoping, and disappointments, and great sadness when our beloved friend Riyad was suddenly gone from us. But his spirit is here with us, and many of us wore pink shirts in his memory. There is so much more to say, but for now, this is just to say we have arrived, we are elated, and we are humbled. We could not have achieved this without the support of so many friends and strangers who believed in us. Shukran, thanks, and love to all of you. Mary in Gaza City. Mary completes her contribution here with this paragraph. One of the things that most amazed me was that so many people were there to greet us, even though the ones I asked told me they felt sure the Israelis would stop our boats. When news reached them that we had set sail from Cyprus, they started to gather in Gaza City, 40,000 of them, determined to be there just in case a miracle happened. They waited there for hours, and a miracle happened. Short musical interlude. Please, no calls yet. I need to check a couple of things here.
قبلهم العلم قالوا مين دحنا ناس شعار من ملامك مش أحيا ويونس ومرعي وانت ربحهم يا اسمر سلامة عن هنا احنا معانا الخبر يوم ما سرتوا معانا الخبر في يوم ما سرتوا في نهار الخميس المبارك عندي ولد درغام وضفته افضحوا يعاد يا مالك معايا الخبر يوم ما سرتوا في نهار الخميس المبارك عندي ولد درغام وضفته احضرته كواين وزالك اهو العلم كان مأنوس مالوح تنق على الكربوس قال له خد يا اسمر ودوس وعس على بيتي يا تغيان انت عس على البيت وروح له وقول انا ضيف العلام ان حد قبلك من العربان الصيف اللي في يدك صدو
Just a few words about the piece you're hearing right now. This is Egyptian music for those more faithful listeners who may recognize it by now. The album is entitled The Musicians of the Nile, Luxor to Izna, Real World Records / Virgin Records, 1989. So this is Egyptian music, this particular piece. Yunus and Aziza, and it sounds like we've got a call coming in on Skype. Greta, can you hear me?
Yeah, it's me.
Did you try to call earlier by chance? Because I just discovered I had my volume turned down. I'm still so unused to using Skype.
I've called a couple times.
Okay, well, please forgive me. I'm just so happy to hear from you again. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Pretty good here in California. You are where again, please?
I'm in Nice, France.
Nice?
France.
Nice, France. Okay. I'm still playing with the volume lines here, figuring out exactly... how to do this. So I'm good to know that your Skype is renewed. What do you call it? Updated?
I had to put a new program in. I had the old Skype, and it simply wasn't working. But this one seems to be working just fine. It only lets me on for maybe half an hour, maybe 40 minutes, but that's fine.
Okay, well, I don't, I'm not sure of what the time... Okay, well, since this is Skype to Skype, that's free, so I don't have to worry about the charge.
That's right.
The longer you can stay with us, the more thrilled I am. Folks, again, this is Greta Berlin, who, along with William Dienst, M.D., who lives in Washington State, authored the book that I'm reading. Do you happen to be listening today, Greta?
I couldn't get on all of it, but I knew that that's what you were doing. It was kind of coming in and out.
Okay, well, I don't, now you know that I know David Vickery, who lives in Morocco, and I had, after a couple of efforts that fell flat, I finally succeeded in interviewing him a few months ago. And I promised you I would let you know how it is that I know David if you ever called in. And but first, tell me, how do you know David?
Only on Facebook. I've never met him. And he sent me a private message and said, please call Ren. I've just done an interview with him, and he would love to talk to you. So I've never met him.
Uh-huh.
But he's another one of those Facebook friends that you know that you know, you feel as though you know them because you've been talking to them so much.
But how is it that you came to talk to him to begin with, that got to the point where he advised you to call me?
I think I friended him, or he friended me. It was probably regarding Palestine. It may have even been because of the book. And then we've just remained friends. And then he had said to me that you had interviewed him, I think, a couple months ago. And he gave me the information and said, you know, call in if you possibly can.
Okay, well, this is how I know David. A year ago, November of 2013, I went to hear Max Blumenthal speak in San Jose. I'm just over the hill from San Jose here. I live just a little bit into the Santa Cruz Mountains from the city of Santa Cruz. And, of course, I do the radio programs from Santa Cruz. And I went to hear and watch Max Blumenthal speak. I bought a copy of Goliath from him.
Right.
And I actually bought the book from his hand, his autographing hand of my copy. And so I did not purchase it from Amazon, but I somehow found myself on the Amazon website reviewing the various readers' reviews, or people who supposedly read the book and gave their nasty, yeah, nasty, right, negative, Hasbara-oriented...
Right. The one-star reviews of books that they've never read, yes.
Yeah. And so I began, of course, posting my comments to these reviews. And as you probably know, some of these can turn into nastily heated conversations. Although when I'm on the Amazon site, I really do try to remind people, hey, let's just talk about the book. But others cannot help themselves but post page after page of their version of all the justifications for the Jews living in Israel and justifications for the Israeli state, committing ethnic cleansing of the native Arabs and all that. And another one of the people who praise Blumenthal and the book Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel was none other than David Vickery. So that's how I came across his name, and we found ourselves kind of posting or sub-posting to each other. And then I found myself, very shortly after I bought the book in San Jose from Max himself, I made up my mind that I'm just going to read this on the air, because for one thing, after all, I kind of suspect that people are not into reading whole hardbound, or for that matter, paperback books.
Well, and his book is huge.
It's huge, but it's the chapters in it are so tiny, which kind of lends itself to readings over the radio.
Right.
So I was often able to cover two or more chapters in a single 2-hour program.
Oh, and it's a great book. I mean, it reads very fast, but it is enormous. I mean, I bought it in California when he was in California, and it's still sitting at my friend Mary's house because it's too big to put in a suitcase.
Yeah. It's okay. So it is physically kind of on the big side. But as I was saying, what more excellent way is there to get the word out, and from the lips, as it were, or the writing hand of a Jew himself, albeit an American Jew, who can afford to be critical of this Jewish state, which pretends to be an exclusively Jewish state. You know, I'm getting kind of old too, Greta. And he's going to have his detractors who dismiss him as a self-hating Jew, of course, which is all they can say. Oh, I know what I wanted to say. When he was younger, when he was a student, probably with the Birthright program or some other similar program, which essentially pays for his visit to Israel, they ship him and his fellow students to Israel, because they see it as part of the heritage and all that. And so that was his introduction to the state of Israel. And obviously, at that tender age, he was able to see for himself that there were some things that were amiss, that were not entirely jiving with the earlier bright, shiny version of Israel that he had been taught was there. And so he ended up going back and then writing Goliath. So that's how I, anyway, that's how I came to know David, and I found myself inviting him to arrange with me to do an interview because he told me he was Canadian and decided to retire, preferring to live amongst Muslims, not being a born and bred Muslim himself, but he feels comfortable in that environment. And of course, David lived for a few years in Palestine, in Nablus, and witnessed the Israeli invasion of Nablus some 10, 12 years ago, and the terrible destruction and havoc that they caused. So that's where that is. Now, Greta, please tell me, you know, it's just so terrific. This is the first time I've spoken with you. I did
for a long time.
Yeah, it's been, what, for 7 years, official, 6.5, 7 years. I did see an interview that you did with someone, but it's good to hear your voice. What are you up to these days?
Well, other than living in France, because I couldn't stand living in the United States any longer, mm-hmm. although, you know, the situation in France at the moment is pretty awful.
Of course.
But we're still working on sending boats. We're still talking about sending a flotilla of boats in May of this year, on the anniversary of when the flotilla was attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure that that's going to happen. But the fact that we are doing this, and by we, I mean a much broader coalition. You know, when you went the first time, it was just Free Gaza. You know, it was just 44 of us crazy people who got on those two little boats and sailed to Gaza. Well, by now, we've got countries involved. We have Sweden involved, Turkey, Greece. You know, people are involved from around the world, and they're talking about getting boats. We've got 3 or 4 right now, and sailing on May 31st or close to May 31st.
That would be the 5th anniversary.
So I'm still doing the same thing. I mean, we haven't had an opportunity to send boats the way we did after 2010, and we were attacked and our passengers were murdered. But that doesn't mean that we've stopped. We haven't.
The mere fact that you're saying what may be complete news to people, that our, as you said, our passengers were murdered, that opens up a floodgate of, hey, what's going on here? Because not everyone was aware of what happened on what is Memorial Day in the United States in 2010, or some have heard it and have long since forgotten about it. But initially, 9 Turkish passengers, including one documented Turkish-American, were executed by Israeli naval commandos when they boarded a vessel in a Free Gaza flotilla in May of 2010, and a 10th has since died. He never came out of his coma. And that was, I believe, exactly on or very nearly on the 4th anniversary of that attack. There's so much to say about these things, and I'm hoping that eventually they'll be covered in further pages in the book. I'm now on Chapter 8. And anything that's not covered, I'll try to cover after the reading of the book is finished a few weeks from now. Can you tell us, now, David sent me an email several weeks ago forwarding the links to what he indicated was an extensive work that you had been doing on the problem of Palestinians being hit or literally run over by Israeli settler vehicles in their own land on the West Bank. Tell us about this effort of yours. What was involved in that?
Well, I mean, what I've been trying to do, because, you know, I can't get back into the occupied West Bank. I'm not allowed.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, they know who I am, and uh-huh. and I've caused way too much public problems for them, so they're not going to let me back
in.
You've
earned a name for yourself as what certainly in our eyes is being a liberator, and in their eyes is being a troublemaker, like so many, many others who are no longer allowed to enter into the West Bank.
Yeah, I think that what they don't want us there to bear witness to what they've been doing, and they I think that they thought that we would, maybe a few of us would come in back in the early beginning of this century, we'd come in and we'd all go home. But what they didn't realize is that many of us went in, bore witness to what was happening, and then continued. We wrote, we spoke. Many of us who went also were the organizers of the boats to Gaza. And so what I can do now is put together long sets of links that verify exactly what Israel is doing. So somebody in a group on Facebook asked me to start collecting information on how many settler attacks had happened against Palestinians. Uh-huh. They also asked me to put another list together of how many journalists have been attacked over the last, and we're looking at just the last 10 years. And so by putting the list together and the links so that you can go and see exactly what happened, people are able to counter the Hasbara by going to those links and posting them. And that's true on Twitter, that's true on Google Plus, and that's true on Facebook. And that's what I've been doing because I think that that is important. That's almost as important as actually doing the things that you and I did when we got on that boat. Yes, I would prefer being feet on the ground, but that doesn't always happen. So uh-huh. You have to find another way of getting the message out to the people who are interested or the people who don't believe the Palestinian point of view and are still looking at the Israeli playbook.
This problem of the exposure to only the Israeli playbook, as you put it, is such a long-going headache for all the freedom and democracy that Israel touts in its state. They are endlessly taking measures to restrict people from outside of Israel and outside of Palestine from witnessing these things themselves. A year or so ago, the Israeli government put the military in charge of as the port authorities in the airports, and probably the land crossings from Jordan as well. Of course, they generally had a hand in overseeing what was going on anyway. But now the military, as I understand it, is in charge, and they're using their own archives and records they have of quote unquote troublemakers. And they are cracking down ever more on delegations, peace-oriented groups, church groups from visiting the West Bank, and in some cases just out and out forbid them, from what I understand, from entering the West Bank so they can see what's going on themselves. And there are so many examples of Israeli soldiers ripping cameras and breaking them out of those who were trying to record what's going on. The very film, Five Broken Cameras, which I've seen twice, is a long documented film example of that. Withholding notes, even opening mail destined for points outside of Israel, and sometimes absconding with the contents. This is, you know, the state of Israel is doing this.
Well, look, this is not a state that is in any way a democracy. This is a thuggish, restricted fascist state that is showing its fangs ever more. The world is beginning to realize that. I think that this whole fiasco of Netanyahu showing up in Paris last week, he became the joke of the world as he tried to elbow his way to the front of this so-called demonstration, where there was no demonstration, man. These were a whole bunch of world leaders that were put onto a private street that was extremely well guarded, all lined up for a photo op, and never marched. They never marched in Paris. They were not marching in Paris. They just lined up on a street to have a photo op, and the street was very heavily guarded. And the real march, where thousands of people were marching, they had nothing to do with.
So for these various world leaders, this was indeed a photo op, and certainly a photo opportunity for Benjamin Netanyahu himself, the Prime Minister of Israel. And again, Totally, not surprisingly, he takes advantage of the opportunity to remind the world that terrorism is supposed to be on the forefront of our concerns, and inferring or outright making links to the Hamas government, the elected government of the Gaza Strip, and just touting that, hitting people on the head with, you see, this is another example of Islamic terrorism, and then making a broad connection to the Palestinians. That's my evaluation of that.
Oh, of course, and you're right. And of course, the biggest terrorist in the Middle East is Israel. I mean, the only country in the Middle East that has willfully invaded all of its neighbors is Israel. Mm-hmm. The only country in the Middle East that has a nuclear weapon and threatens the Samson option, so that if you don't behave, I'm going to drop a nuclear weapon on you, is Israel. The only country in the Middle East that has invaded territory that doesn't belong to them and then confiscated it is Israel.
And sometimes invading the same land over and over again, such as the Sinai Peninsula in two separate wars.
That's right.
And
that's the biggest thug in the Middle East, and that's saying something, because there are a lot of thugs in the Middle East, but the biggest thug in the Middle East is Israel.
No question. And I was just thinking today, you know, of course, neither Israel nor the United States acknowledge or put themselves under the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, which in Israel's eyes and in the U.S. government eyes allows them to dismiss not only the dictates of the ICC itself, but Abbas's statement last weekend that he applied for Palestine to be covered by the ICC, and the International Criminal Court did accept that. And I was just thinking on my way over today, one of the defenses that Israel or any other country will say is, well, we have our own court system, just as every other country has their court system. Of course, the purpose of the ICC is to make up for the shortfalls of any single national court, which can happen anywhere in the world, which automatically should give it broader jurisdiction. And this is exactly why Israel doesn't participate and doesn't recognize the ICC, and likewise why the U.S. doesn't recognize it.
By the way, this is the reason that the United States is so pissed off, by the way. And it's not because they are doing this for any humanitarian reasons. It's because the United States has not signed, they have not ratified the Rome Statute, and neither did Israel.
Correct.
So they're like a toothless tiger. They're going to yell and they're going to scream and they're going to go on and on about the ICC, but they can't do anything about it because they didn't join it. And so Palestine finally got clever enough to realize that if they wanted to have any kind of justice, and I think the Palestinians have been amazingly patient, even though I am not fond of Abbas and I'm not fond of the PA, they have bent over backwards to try to accommodate Israel and to accommodate the occupier.
Occupation management tool of the Israelis.
Yeah, I mean, it's not up to the oppressed to be able to back down. It's up to the oppressor. And that's Israel. So I think the Abbas finally got a set of balls and said, I'm fed up with this. I'm going to sign the Rome Statute, which is what he did. And so there's nothing that the United States can do. The United States has no power at the ICC.
But then again, one can say the ICC itself is rather toothless, particularly if you major powers like the U.S. and Israel don't refuse to pay attention to its dictates. So it's kind of a two-edged, dulled sword.
It is, but look, even though Israel has not signed or ratified the Rome Statutes, Palestine is. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing with the ICC is, if you're a state and you want to bring a case against another state, as long as you are the state that is the plaintiff, you're the one bringing the complaint, you can do that. The other state doesn't have to belong.
Again, folks, you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is the Mideast Migraine Show with under Free Radio Santa Cruz, and this is a live interview with Greta Berlin out there in Nice, France, where she's chosen to live and carry on the struggle for recognition of the Palestinian situation, their long-ignored narrative, and anything else she could do to straighten out that mess. Greta is one of the co-editors of the book Freedom Sailors that I generally read on Saturday. Of course, I'm perfectly delighted to have the interruption in the reading of the book. Finally got you here in interview. I read the names of the people who I remember, and frankly, two or three of them who I don't even quite remember anymore, having been on the voyage, and I find myself wondering what exactly is happening to these people. Of course, I regularly get messages from David Schermerhorn and the wonderful contributions that he has, and this and that. How is Mary doing these days? I'm sure you must keep in touch with her.
I do. I just talked to her 2 days ago. She and I and a wonderful Irish woman by the name of Sinead McLaughlin are planning on going to Gaza. We started something that is called Freedom Stitchers instead of Freedom Sailors, and we've raised money to go to Gaza. And what we're going to do is we're going to work with women there who embroider. I mean, the Palestinian women are famous for that. And they're going to teach us how to embroider, and Mary's going to teach them how to knit, and Sinead is going to teach them how to crochet, and I'm going to film this, and it's going to be a woman-to-woman initiative where it's more of a bonding thing. Now, we would have gone last year, Ren, but we can't get in. We're simply waiting for that opportunity. I think I have 4 duffel bags, for example, of knitting supplies under my beds here in France, because we can't get into Gaza at all. We can't get in Rafah, and we certainly are not even going to be able to enter Israel to get in through Erez. So she's now 81 years old. She's a remarkable woman.
Uh-huh.
She's still talking, and we're still talking about going. We're hoping to be able to go this summer, or late summer. And we're doing it on the same kind of an idea that Freedom Sailors was, and we're calling it Freedom Stitchers. But this is more of a micro economy, a micro business, where we will help the Palestinian women set the business up, and then whatever we all jointly make, we already have people who are interested in buying the product.
I have heard of the Freedom Stitchers movement and the project, and I take it there's interest in trying to export some of the items that are handcrafted by the Palestinians in Gaza itself.
That's what we hope to do. What we actually hope to do is to bring in 4 or 5 big duffel bags full of product, full of raw material, knitting supplies, yarn, all those other kinds of things, and spend 6 weeks having a great time. We expect to have a great time. This is going to be a good news story where we'll be able to interview women. We'll be able to talk to them. They're going to do the same thing with us. They're going to try to teach us. I'm intending on filming all the silliness that we do. I mean, I have no idea, for example, how to hold 2 knitting needles. I have no clue. And so whatever we make jointly, we already have people like Mika, for example, and other organizations who are willing to buy anything that we bring out.
You know what the thing that you're describing here, Greta, what this reminds me of is a very popular, if grave, saying that goes back some years here in the U.S. It will be a great day when teachers and schools get all the money they need and the Air Force has to hold a bake sale in order to buy a bomber. That kind of sound, that is brought to mind when you're describing the situation. This should be an industry which should be given free rein to develop in what is supposed to be an independent and sovereign Palestine. And here you are talking about, and I'm not being critical by saying this, I'm certainly not trying to hurt your feelings, but you were talking about a few duffel bags of material, and this should be a well-developed industry of sorts, even though we're talking
absolutely.
About a handicap.
You're absolutely right, Ren. It's heartbreaking that is the only thing that we can do. I mean, there is 4.3 trillion cubic feet of natural gas off the shores of Gaza. Uh-huh. Gaza has become another Singapore, but Israel is stealing all of it. So what do we end up doing? We end up as activists taking in 4 duffel bags of materials because we can't get the world to realize that what Israel is doing to Gaza and the genocide that's going on
has
there
everything
has nothing
to do
with
the
Hamas.
Natural gas fields.
The natural gas.
Yes, I am committing myself to hitting that whole topic harder on the head and getting people to realize that is what is largely behind the attacks on Gaza. It's simply to wrest their own natural resources from them. We're talking about
That's
natural
right.
gas fields in the underneath the Mediterranean Sea, which lie in Gazan territorial waters, internationally recognized Gazan waters, and Israel is ignoring those parameters, boundaries, and just stealing it for themselves. And it's obvious to me they're hoping to eventually drive all the Arabs out of Gaza and take the entire strip back, not to mention the West Bank.
Of course that's what they're going to do. They're going to take the natural gas. Look at the beachfront. We were there. You know what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the beachfront property that Gaza has.
That too.
They could turn that into the most amazing beachfront property. And instead, it's filled with sewage because Israel has bombed the sewage plant.
Exactly.
So what Israel wants to do is drive the Palestinians out. They'll get beachfront property, and they'll get the natural gas.
And until then, of course, any efforts on the part of the Gazans there to develop that property for themselves is utterly frustrated and sabotaged by Israel in a kind of indirect way. If they're not going to bomb the property themselves in the course of one of these three major attacks in the last 6 years, then they're going to force Hamas to divert what little resources it has towards trying to shore up the shoddy infrastructure they have for electricity and for water sewage and for all these and roads and everything and just force them to take their attention off of the gas fields. That's the way I look at it. Greta, is there anything else you'd like to cover?
You know, what I'm hoping will happen for all those people who are listening, honestly, is that they pick up the book and they read the book. All of the proceeds that go towards buying the book go to projects in Gaza. Bill and I don't keep any of that money for ourselves.
Of course not.
And that people support the Palestinian playbook, if that's what you want to call it, that they do their research, that they look at what is happening. This has been going on now for 67 years.
Yes.
And I've been involved with it for 48. So ever since 1967. And so I see a change. I see a change in the way people see this conflict. I see that people are now interested in what's happening to the Palestinians. So if I wanted to say anything as to wrap up this interview with you, it would be to not believe what the Israelis say. Don't believe what Fox News says. Find your own sources. Go to www.ifamericansknew.org. Uh-huh. Go and read the book. It is not hard to learn about what has happened to Palestine since 1948.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage everyone to do that, because once you learn the truth, you will never, ever go back to seeing the Middle East the same way again.
Exactly. That's exactly true. Of course, the way I prefer to put it to people, Greta, is I try not to rain on your parade at all, but instead of saying outright, don't listen to so-and-so, don't listen to any of these people, my inclination is to say, go ahead and listen to Fox once, or go ahead and listen to these other purveyors of the Israeli narrative and their side of the story, but just don't feed yourself on that. Do indeed the second half of what you were saying is certainly I'm in complete agreement with. You want to go to as many different sources as you can, and not raise up yourself on a steady diet of Israel can do no wrong, and Israel, after all, is our ally, quote unquote, in the Middle East, and what they're actually doing is frustrating a lot of things for the United States, and not to mention all the terrible espionage they've committed on the U.S. Some ally, hey. People need to get as much information as they can from as many different sources as they can, and let the people sort it out themselves and see the contradictions and see the hypocrisy.
I agree. And I mean, my last point is that once you do that as an American, it's not that we get angry because of what Israel does to the Palestinians. We get angry because we have been lied to all of our lives. And those are the people who need to take a stand and say, not in my name, not with my money, and not with my support ever again.
It's a universal message, and it applies, of course, what you said is resurrects the memory of the phrase, never again, that Jewish people are taught as a mantra to say in terms of never again a Holocaust, never again a massacre to our people. When what they we should all be saying is never again for anyone should these things be happening.
You remember Hedy Epstein.
Oh, yes.
In Cyprus, you know.
Yes.
She's a Holocaust survivor. By the way, I just saw last year, she just turned 90. She's wonderful. She's in great shape. She runs around like a crazy lady. It's just, she's absolutely an amazing woman. And her thing always was, never again meant never again for anyone.
Uh-huh.
And that's why she will not support Israel. That's why she absolutely refuses to support them.
I read the article and saw the picture of her being cuffed and taken away by the cops in St. Louis a few months ago, and that was refreshing to see that she's still on the front lines of this stuff. Okay, well, Greta, I'm going to let you go, and I just want to emphasize that I really love you, and I think about you one way or another every day, every week of my life, and, of course, what we all participated in the summer of 2008, and I really can you let me know personally the next time you're in town or in state anyway.
I'll be there in April.
In April, okay. And do you gravitate towards? Is it Orinda, or did that just happen to be a place where you lived?
Orinda and Oakland. That's where my brother and sister live.
Okay,
but I easily can get down to San Jose, for example. Not a problem.
Terrific. Well, of course, I'm in Scotts Valley, which is just a few miles up the coast from Santa Cruz on
right,
the
I
coast.
I know where you are. My nephew goes to Santa Cruz, so it gives me a good excuse.
Okay.
He goes to the university there.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorite spots. Oh, we just had a series of discussions from a variety of speakers on the situation there. Split narrative in many directions, but that was on Merrill campus there. Interesting. I attended a few of them, and we're hacking away here. Our local Palestine-Israel Action Committee meets every month, and we are involved in a variety of projects, including the showing of the film Al Helm this Sunday. I'll give people more details about that. Greta, thanks again.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Habibi. I'm delighted to talk to you. It was great fun to be on that adventure with you. And, of course, you're in the book, so I'm hoping you get around to when you read your own. I will stay in touch, and I'll see you in April.
I don't think I ever mentioned to you that as we were leaving the harbor in Larnaca, finally underway, I saw out of the corner of my eye you were crying. You were
in tears. Oh, yeah, I cried. I got seasick. I'll leave it with this. I do remember one thing that you said to me, which I'll never forget. I still tell that story. And you were in the back of the boat. Everybody was seasick.
Uh-huh.
And you were in the back of the boat. Everybody was hanging on, throwing up over the side of the boat. And I was standing there, and I threw up. And you turned to me and you said, the great Greta Berlin is not invincible. Is not invincible.
Did I say that?
Yes.
I had no recollection.
It was true.
Well,
and it was true. I only threw up once. That was it. That's all I had to do. But I did definitely throw up. It's one of those things I will never forget. I still laugh about it, Ren. I still think that that was such a great comment. And it made me laugh, and I stopped throwing up.
I don't think I even feel good about even saying that to you to begin with. And I'd say, but I'm glad you stopped throwing up.
Because it was so true, because you had been in those 3 weeks with me where every single day I had to come in and say to all of you, I don't know where the boats are.
I know. And I felt, you know, there was so much, and I was 55 years old and still very much, far too much wrapped up in my own problems and my own weaknesses. I that's part of the pain of going through the details of this book again, as I have to remember that I was kind of cloistered into myself and not opening up to the broader picture, but which is exactly why I'd love to go to do something like this again. Okay, Greta, my love to you, and thank you so much.
Much love to you as well. Thank you, Ren. I'll talk to you later. I'll see you in April.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
There you have it, folks. Greta herself. As I indicated, our mutual friend David in Morocco expedited my desire to interview Greta again, or to interview her finally. This is the first time that I've spoken to her and heard her voice speaking directly to me anyway, not a recorded interview or whatever, since those fateful days in the summer of 2008. And the woman has been a tremendous inspiration to me and continues to be so. So we finally, you know, early in the reading of this book, I was gravitating towards interviewing her, and that's done. And the show is being recorded, and this recording pans out. Sometimes they actually don't. It says something about the nature of grassroots underground pirate radio. You know, whole thing is kind of held together with Band-aids and rubber bands, as it were. Things tend to fall apart. Which, by the way, is why we easily welcome your donations, folks. All programmers, including myself, pay on a monthly basis for the privilege and the honor of producing and hosting our own programs here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Please consider sending some kind of a donation supporting this service. And every time I say the word donation or think the word donation and get on the mic to ask people for money, it's always in the back of my mind that everyone is has their hand out these days. Not as though it's a new phenomenon, but all I can say is, what can I say? But we are joining the chorus of the many, many, many who ask for donations. Please consider giving something to keep this wonderful, truly grassroots community radio service alive. Send a check or money order only, no cash, please. Send it to this address. You want to write on the envelope FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz, of course. If you want to, you can spell it out, but you need only write FRSC, Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz, again, two words, SANTACRUZ, Santa Cruz, California, zip code 95061. Let me give that to you again. And this address is available at our website. So if you still are not writing it down, you have no excuse. You can still go to our website. It's plain as day there under contact. Mail your check or money order to FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Don't forget, you may send your message to the email address for this program, MideastMadness@gmx.com, MideastMadness@gmx.com. This is the Mideast Migraine Show on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Streaming live at freakradio.org and broadcasting to the city of Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM. 101.3 on the FM dial. It is 12:30. It's half past noon. We have roughly a half hour or so for me to continue the readings of the book. And don't forget that the readings, today's reading, eventually will be recorded, put up in my archives, along with the previous readings of this book, of the earlier mentioned Max Blumenthal's Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. I have also read They Dare to Speak Out by Congressman Paul Finley. Chapters are available at my archives, and those are available at radioforall.net, four being the number four, radioforall.net, or Santa Cruz Indie Bay, for previous readings, certainly of the book that I'm, of most immediate concern of the book that I'm reading now, Freedom Sailors, the inside story of the Gaza, the Free Gaza Movement's first voyage to challenge Israel's illegal blockade of Gaza and how we succeeded in spite of ourselves. And just a little more fleshing out of the results of those voyages. There were some four or five more successful voyages, I believe all emanating from Cyprus into the Gaza Strip, which took place after the first voyages of our two boats, the Liberty and the Free Gaza. And then that terrible, totally politically motivated assault by Israel on the Gaza Strip in December and January 2008, 2009, only a few months after we set sail and went out there and came back with all hands, except for a few who decided to stay for a while in the Gaza Strip. And then the war happened, and then after that war, there, even though there have been many tries to sail back, Israel would not allow the boats to sail. They were in what are clearly recognized as pirate activities in international waters, never in Israeli territorial waters, not even in Gaza waters, before we were even able to get close, or those subsequent boats were able to get close to the Gaza Strip. While still in international waters in the Mediterranean Sea, Israel attacked, commandeered those boats, roughed up the people, including the murder of eventually 10 Turkish citizens on the Mavi Marmara in the second flotilla attempt to reach Gaza, and over 100 people very badly injured, and some very badly and brutalized and beat up, in addition to the 10 murders. That was in May of 2010, not even 2 years after our first voyages. Israel just will not allow even freedom of movement to and from that imprisoned territory, tiny 35-mile-long territory, from anyone outside of it. This is pure brutality, no practical justification. Shoot, I just remembered what I wanted to ask Greta about, whether or not there's any talk of coming to some kind of a practical accommodation with Israel to allow the boats to come in and out. But of course, our basic position is we shouldn't have to and don't need to ask for Israel's permission, because that port in Gaza City is supposed to be and is legally on the books under international agreement an open port, and anyone should be able to come in or out under the authority not of the Israeli government and not of the Israeli military, but of the Hamas government, which still sits in power in Gaza. Whatever else one may think of Hamas and whatever opinions you have about terrorism, at the very least, Hamas should have control of its own territory and access to its own territory from without. And that includes Palestinians who want to be able to leave and come back. Okay, there is so much to this to this whole story, folks, and I'm always, you know, when I get going like this, I'm always tempted to just go on and on and, you know, expound upon all this stuff for those who need to have it expounded upon them. Okay, I'm going to go back to the reading now of Freedom Sailors, edited by Greta Berlin and Bill Dienst, M.D. I just finished a couple of pages by Mary, whom I talked about with Greta just now. And she ended up saying, the Gazans waited there for hours, and the miracle happened. one more quick note. Try to be patient and recognize that this is an edited compilation of the writings of several people. So it can be confusing hearing one story after another. These are largely personal renditions and remembrances of what happened. And so the timeline is a little screwy. It's a little mixed up. So we're kind of going back and forth between, say, the day before or the night before we finally made it to Gaza. It took essentially 2 days. We spent one night on the open seas, plowing the open seas. So between the night before and just after we arrived in Gaza, the narrative kind of wavers and goes back and forth. Just try to appreciate where we're at any given point in the reading. Here we go. This next section was written by Dr. Mona Alfera, Palestinian, who resides on the island of Cyprus. Dr. Mona Alfera, waiting in Gaza. It was a hot summer day in Gaza. I was at the humble port of Gaza, Gaza City, at 7 a.m. on August 23rd. That was the day we arrived, with the team of the Palestinian International Campaign to End the Siege. I was so excited, anxious, and exhausted, but I would never give up hope that those brave 44 pioneering men and women who were trying to break the siege would make it. We had lost communications with them and had heard that all radio transmissions were cut off. That was largely true. I had conflicting feelings. Worried, afraid for their safety. My brother was on one of those boats. As time passed, the huge crowds who were waiting gave up and left the beach. I stayed with a few people, not willing to give up hope that we would soon see them over the horizon. I was feeling hot, sweaty, and tired, trying to cheer up the people next to me, talking about the impact of publicity of this great act of solidarity by people from around the world. Even if they did not make it to Gaza, it was a big victory for solidarity and for the activists who tried to reach us. Dr. Alfera goes on here. My heart was roaring with conflicting feelings. Oh my God, will they stay alive? What is next? What will the Israeli reaction be like? We waited and waited as the afternoon sun bore down on us. All of a sudden, in the far horizon of the lovely Sea of Gaza, I could see two tiny, strange, and moving objects. Somebody shouted, "It's the boats! It's the Free Gaza Movement boats!" In disbelief, I ran to the far end of the port, shouting and chanting, "Free, free Palestine!" I was dancing with joy, watching the boats coming closer and closer. Crowds started to pour into the port, spontaneous, happy, and excited. I hurried to try to get on board one of the small Gaza fishing boats. It was difficult. All of a sudden, I was picked up and carried by some fishermen. I wasn't the only one then. I found myself on a small boat while the Free Gaza boats entered the harbor. I was waving, stretching my hands, crying and laughing at the same time. Then I was carried by the same fishermen and found myself on board the Free Gaza, hugging Greta, Mary, and my brother Mushir. For me, it was a historic moment. I was proud, relieved, and full of joy. We are not alone. We are not forgotten. I thought, they made it, and one day Palestinian people will make it and be free. It will happen. This experience makes me think deeper about the importance of people's solidarity with Palestine and how we should always strengthen this bond and fight together against all sorts of injustices, small or large. It is a day I will never forget. Thank you, Mona Alfera. This next section, written by member of the Gazan Parliament, MP Jamal El-Khoudary, waiting in Gaza. He gave me his business card. He found himself on my boat, and I greeted him, and I'm not sure why he gave me the card. And I don't know if he knew I was important or not. Not that I was. Anyway, okay, this contributed by MP Jamal El-Khoudary, waiting in Gaza. The day they arrived sailing from Cyprus to the port of fishermen in the Gaza Strip was joyful as we welcomed them. I was always sure that their trip would succeed because it had all the elements of success. The noble will, the ongoing work, sacrifice, teamwork, persistence, and determination. These reasons made the ships Liberty and Free Gaza break the siege for the first time since 1967. That moment was the defining one in the course of the siege. All Gazans, men, women, and children, even our elderly people, celebrated the arrival of these 44 activists. They wanted to shake hands with them, to sit with them, to talk to them. Their arrival had laid the foundation to break the siege. Words can never express our gratitude and appreciation to each one of the activists. They came from different countries and different religions. They were young and they were old. They had braved the sea and the threats. And they agreed on one goal, defending the oppressed and the weak, the people with no voice. And they stood up with us in the face of the occupier. We thank all the activists whom we shall never forget. On that day, we made history. They made history, as Mr. Al-Qudari puts it here. They made history, but of course, everyone rejoiced in a collective moment of solidarity. It's also, in addition to the happy memories this brings me, it's also sad to know that I actually find myself wondering whether or not this effort to open the port of Gaza somehow contributed to an excuse for Israel to launch the three wars that it executed. Three massacres is what they really were, with a minimal number of Israeli servicemen and women perhaps dying in that effort. A totally disproportionate casualty rate ratio between the two. If somehow those attacks were spurred on in part by our effort to help free the besieged, the economically and militarily besieged Gaza Strip, it's not something that I need to feel guilty about, I know, but I can't help but wonder. As we approach the end of the show, it's 12:42 Pacific Standard Time here. Let's open up the phone line and turn on my ringers here and watch the board. The phone number to the studio is area code 831. That's Santa Cruz County in Central California, area code 831-427-3772. Again, area 831-427-3772. Slight musical interlude while we wait for those calls.
الشعور على اسم البدوي خدوه يونس داخل جوا القسرية ولد جميل ولد البدوية حتى البنات المخفية لبسوا عمايم بيض يشوفوه اتلمت كل الخواجات تجار المدينة جات تاج الفوت على العيشات سيبوا العيش للكلاب نغنوا على الهلال يونس داخل جوا البندر بجمال الهلال يتغندر نادى مدلل يا جحفر صوت الادب ما قاله نعم الدلال لما كان شرقي السوق يعمر الا بيه نعم يا سعادة البيه ما تقول للحكاية ايه الدنيا عقدك بقرشين حصل لنا البعرة بياخدوا عليه فوق العصر عرق الجميل يد عصر عصر سبع بنات وقعوا من القصر عشان جمال يونس يشوفوه لما يونس قال يا سيد واحدة الدب والتانية السيد يا بنات مش أمره طيب لما غريب الدار تهنو على الهن شوف الدلال بدا بالعيب يونس طلع عقده من الجيب الأم شيحة والخال أبو زيد القوا القمر وشلع له في غيب ولا فانوس في العتمة قدو على الهن لما قاعد حي عشمان أروح النجع
As you are probably able to infer from the character of the singing of that long, long, nearly 10-minute long piece from this album, The Musicians of the Nile, Luxor to Izna in Egypt, this is a piece of poetry and something of a ballad. It's called, the same piece I introduced earlier, Yunus wa Aziza. Aziza, Yunus and Aziza. The epic poet, Shair of Upper Egypt, conjures up memories of the nomad Arab tribes, Banu Hilal, sons of the crescent moon, who around the middle of the 10th century emigrated from the Nejd Plateau, part of present-day Saudi Arabia, to Tunisia. The dark, craggy face of Shamandi Tufik, a charcoal gypsy, like the ruggedness of an old stone, evokes the main hero of the Hilalian epic, Abu Zayd al-Hilali, the knight who was born black. He was a product of his mother's wish, who, being infertile, asks God to grant her a child, even if he has to be as black as a crow. Makes one want to find out more of the mindset of 10th century Arabs. Fascinating. And there are far more details about each of the numbers on this compendium of Egyptian, very, very folkish tunes and ballads. And again, as I said in an earlier show, that was my local Minneapolis, Minnesota matron of the art, Cassandra, the most well-known belly dancer in the Twin Cities, advised me personally to look for that album if I wanted decent music to do belly dancing to. And that one piece might not be the best sample of music to dance baladi or traditional belly dancing to. Belly dancing is referred to it in the West. The proper term, I believe, is baladi dancing. There are other pieces of music on that album. Okay, let us get back to the reading. At 10 minutes before 1 o'clock, phones are off again, as MP Jamal Al-Qudari signed off here with We thank all the activists whom we shall never forget. On that day, they made history. Now, Renee Boyer, who I remember very well, chimes in. Renee Boyer on board the Liberty. There was a moment on the 23rd of August, 2008, sometime after 3 p.m., when I suddenly realized I was going to reach Gaza. Up until that moment, the idea had been a dream, never far from my consciousness, but still very much a dream. For 2 years, I and my crazy seafaring friends had done all sorts of things to try and make this journey happen, had held secret meetings in the bombed-out streets of Dahiya in southern Lebanon, and put letters under stage doors of famous people acting in London's West End in the hope that they might want to come along. We had spent the years trying to convince people that we really would save enough pennies to buy a boat and sail to Gaza. But I had said it so many times, in so many strange and coded ways. Parenthetically, Renee writes, I remember, after talking to Riyadh on the phone, the late Riyadh, sometimes I used to wonder if I was not really involved in some project for assessing the likelihood of acquiring double-decker buses to be used in areas of Beirut rather than buying a boat. Anyway, she goes on, it had become almost like something that was going to happen, but only in the future. The frustrating, agonizing, and brilliantly entertaining 3 weeks we spent in Cyprus inventing ways to keep ourselves occupied, like hand-sewing banners, and our thoughts away from the possibility that the boats weren't actually coming. That was when we were waiting on Cyprus for the boats to make it from Crete and other points in the territory of the country of Greece. And our thoughts away from the possibility that the boats weren't actually coming suggested to me that the moment might never be realized, the moment of knowing we would see Gaza from atop a rolling wave. But then that moment came. We got the all clear from the radio, and everyone on board the boat started repeating to everyone else that the Israelis were not going to come. They were not going to stop us. The only thing that was between us and Gaza was the clear rolling sea. I remember staring toward the shore, waiting for the first sight of the land while Gaza was still hidden by the horizon haze. But even in the midst of that joy, images of Gaza were haunting me. What would we find when we reached there? How scarred would the war-weary people be? Would they really care to see two fishing boats filled with very seasick passengers coming into port? People who had so many horror stories to tell. Of the little girl kneeling in anguish amongst the shattered bodies of her family, shelled while picnicking on the Gaza beach. Of an alleyway in Beit Hanun running a stream of blood from the massacres of 2006. Just to remind you folks, she's talking about things that happened well before these last most horrible invasions and slaughters by Israel over the past few years, all before these three most vivid examples of Israel's aggression. Of the crumpled body of a woman lying beneath the lamppost, killed while protesting the besieging of the Beit Hanun Mosque where the men were trapped inside. Of a little boy begging his father to shield him, and the father sitting helpless as his protecting arms failed to stop the bullet that murdered him. And of a young American woman shouting at the driver of a bulldozer to stop, but he didn't, crushing her with his blade, which he dropped back over her crumpled body to crush her again. Here, of course, Renee is talking about Rachel Corey, who died on behalf of homeless Palestinians in southern Gaza. Renee continues here. Somewhere there behind the haze was Gaza, a place filled with so many stories of tragedy and suffering as any place in the world was. And then the horizon haze lifted and we were staring at the skyline of Gaza City itself. an involuntary cry went up from everyone on board the boat, and I can't remember whether it was with tears or laughter. Both, probably. Some of us were jumping up and down, some embracing, some sitting quietly. I am not sure that anyone was prepared for this or for what happened next. We had prepared ourselves for capture, to be shelled, for our boats to sink. We had prepared ourselves for lengthy stints in Israeli prisons and the possibilities of injury. But I am not sure that we had dared prepare ourselves for the sort of greeting we were to have when we reached the people of Gaza. We hadn't really thought much about what we would do if we actually reached the shores. I remember sometime that morning while on the boat and when there was still a whole sea between us and Gaza that someone on board had said there were thousands of people at Gaza port waiting for our arrival. But hours and hours had passed since then. By now it was almost sunset, and it had never been clear to the people of Gaza that we were going to make it. Surely they had gone home. But when we got close enough to the shore, we saw that there were not just thousands of people still there, but tens of thousands. Old fishing boats spilling over with people were sailing towards us with so many happy faces on board. There were drums beating and kids in the water, unafraid of the boats that were tossing to and fro on the swell around them. As our boats were escorted into the port, and we were finally aware of the extent of the welcome, I don't think there was a dry eye on board either of our boats. Who were we to deserve this? What had we done or endured on the scale of what the people around us had done and endured to be given this honor? In an era where this sort of turnout in the West only happens for film stars or sporting heroes, and in Australia, sometimes for the Queen, Renee is Australian here. It came as a shock to see how different it was here. This greeting and celebration was not for an individual or for individuals. Not for sporting prowess or Hollywood good looks. It was for what we represented by making that journey. I am not sure that I know exactly what we did represent to the people who came to greet us. But it had to do with civil resistance, with challenging injustice, and with upholding the human right to break barriers when they were set there to imprison. Barriers that were set there to imprison. Is there any other port in the world where this could possibly happen? Where before any formalities or passport checks, customs or officials, we could be embraced as lost relatives might be by whoever was near enough to embrace us? Where we could fish sparkling-eyed, laughing children out of the water before we had even thrown a rope ashore? I doubt it. It was exhilarating. On the 23rd of August, 2008, we were witness to a massive celebration of civil resistance. The Palestinian people showed the world that day that they were still capable of the most wholesome and forgiving of human gestures, joy, which is in itself the supreme act of resistance. Yes, we were not just witnesses, but also a part of those celebrations because, in some small way, our long journey there had allowed them to happen. For that, I will be forever humbled and grateful. Well, it's pretty much 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's very tempting for me to continue. Well, heck, why not, folks? There's only a few pages until the until the end of the chapter, and let me double check here. Nope. 1 o'clock is open time. There is no scheduled program, so let me finish the chapter. Back to Aki Nawaz of Pakistan, his second contribution to this book. Aki Nawaz on board the Liberty. Moments earlier, I had been in despair. Suddenly, out of the sky, a transmission arrived that the Israelis had backed down. From what, I never knew. we never sought their approval, and the news was literally the biggest wave that hit us. From despair over that terrible night came joy. The whole mutiny episode was sent down into the depths of the sea as we all jumped and hugged each other. Love had returned in all its glory. Everyone was fabulous to me again. The camera switched itself on and captured the moments. The ship swung around and held hands once more, and we prepared them as if we were the happy wedding party. The flags pointed towards Gaza. I was overwhelmed, but I wanted to see that city before it saw me. As I scrambled up to the highest point on the ship, there in the distance was Utopia. This was a voyage bigger than any film. It was real. The skyline appeared, and there it was, and we had broken the siege, at least for the moment. This continuous and deliberate barbaric act against humanity had been, for once, blasphemed against with righteousness and goodwill. I phoned friends around the world and showed off. We had done it. They had all thought we were crazy, and they were right. Gaza began to shine and glitter as it became bigger and closer. Local fishermen and their boats had never seen happier times as they created a carnival of sound and colors escorting us into the harbor. Thousands stood at the seafront with the biggest and most beautiful smiles. The feeling cannot be captured by words or expression. I always hated flags as a sign of patriotic symbolism. But for once, I picked up the Pakistani flag and waved it to the people of Gaza to let them know that people in Pakistan carry their struggle with them every day. Every person on those ships, as well as those that worked on this Mission Impossible, represent the best of humanity from all over the world. This mission really happened, and it was better than any song I could possibly write. Yes, Aki is a songwriter, perhaps a musician, maybe a music producer, and a recorder of those cultural activities. We are 2 pages from the end of the chapter. Sharon, after disembarking from the Free Gaza, this is her, another piece by Sharon Locke. How can I possibly begin to coherently tell you anything of the last 24 hours? I can't even comprehend any of it right now, let alone communicate it. You'll just have to get it in scraps of thoughts. Yvonne and I are sitting here right now trying to think of the date yesterday. We've made history and neither of us even knows what day we did it on, says Yvonne. Who went on to say, just as well that it wasn't us running the Battle of Hastings. We'd be saying 1063, or was it 1065? End quote. We've now agreed it was August 23rd yesterday, and I am very much hoping this finally gets me into the Houseman's Peace Diary without dying, even if just for the next year. Here in a restaurant overlooking crumbling shacks on the beach, we exchange greetings with our hosts in such a daze that I still don't know most of their names. But the important thing was we had all of them. Every group with which we'd worked was united in their support of our accomplishment. The Popular Committee Against the Siege and the International Campaign to End the Siege on Gaza, the Gaza Medical Relief Society folks, the Gaza Community Mental Health Program, and other nonpartisan groups, Hamas and Fatah reps, and PFLP were present. PFLP, of course, stands for the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Long, long history with them. Huwaida even got a congratulatory call from Mohammed Abbas, the head of government in the West Bank. Not particularly legitimate, but the only one the United States talks to. For at least an hour or two, we had achieved Palestinian national unity. I had to hit the cough button there. Huwaida, by the way, who was one of the 44 activists, is a native Palestinian. I can't remember if she's Christian or Muslim, but she is an attorney, Huwaida Araf, I believe her full name is, one of the co-founders of the International Solidarity Movement, and she is a mother, fairly recent mother, and married to an Israeli Jew. Never forget her. Continuing now with this piece by Sharon. The next day, just as I thought the dreamlike quality of things might at least start to disperse, some of my comrades came back from an official lunch with Ismail Haniyeh, the Hamas prime minister. Many of us chose not to attend to remain clearly politically separate from any faction. My comrades announced that we would be given Palestinian citizenship. And for the first time, I began to cry. And let me break in here to admit, yes, I still have my Hamas-issued Palestinian passport in all its glory, which states on the cover that I am a special ambassador. They all said that. All 44 of the passports were handed out to those of us who sailed in. Special ambassadors, one and all. All totally legal and real. This next piece, next single paragraph by Dr. Bill, August 23rd. All 44 of us are taken to the Eldira Hotel and assigned rooms. Our baggage arrived later, taken off the two boats by the police after we had negotiated the chaos of dense and giant crowds in the marina. After settling in, we are hosted for a dinner reception out on the hotel veranda overlooking the beach. We can see our boats docked to the south, bobbing softly in the water about a half a kilometer away. And that's twice now that contributors to the writing of this book have described our boats as bobbing in the water. Nothing in comparison to the bobbing and the tossing while we were crossing the Med. This next piece was written by Vittorio Aragoni, Vittorio Utopia Aragoni, as I believe he was introduced earlier, August 23rd. The Italian man spoken of earlier. History is us. This is written more like a poem here. History is us. History is not cowardly governments with their loyalty to whoever has the strongest military. History is made by ordinary people, everyday people with family at home and a regular job who are committed to peace as a great ideal, to the rights of all, to staying human. History is us who risked our lives to bring utopia within reach, to offer a dream, a hope, to hundreds of thousands of people who cried with us as we reached the port of Gaza. Our message of peace is a call to action for other ordinary people like ourselves, not to hand over your lives to whatever puppeteer is in charge this time around, but to take responsibility for the revolution first, the inner revolution, to give love, to give empathy. It is this that will change the world. We have shown that peace is not an impossible utopia, or perhaps we have shown that sometimes utopia can be possible. Believe this. Stand firm against intimidation, fear, and despair, and simply remain human. Black and white photo of Vittorio, arm in arm with Captain John, and me off to the off in the corner of the photograph holding one of the balloons that we brought for the children. Vittorio, Captain John, and Ren are overjoyed to arrive in Gaza. Okay, folks, that is Chapter 8 completed. First to last word in a single show. We've gone 10 minutes over time. I want to invite everyone back next Saturday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, Pacific Standard Time, to begin Chapter 9. And once again, let me see, There are 12 chapters in all. We'll begin 9 next Saturday at 11 a.m. here on the Mideast Migraine Show Saturday edition. Please don't forget the other weekly edition of Mideast Migraines every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 in the afternoon. Thank you for joining me. Special thanks to those that I can calculate here online who are listening. You are most welcome to have joined the program and my reading of Freedom Sailors. Until next time, thanks again, and ta-ta.